My first guest in this edition is retired Army Major General Paul Vallely. He is also the author most recently of Blood for Our Future, and during his military career, he rose to the rank of Deputy Commanding General in the Pacific. And it's from that experience, as well as other knowledge he has, we want to draw on today and get his analysis of the situation in North Korea. Is this just more noisy saber-rattling, or is North Korea actually ready to launch potentially a nuclear attack on its neighbors to the south or elsewhere? And, General, it's always good to have you with us.
Thank you, Greg.
We've heard this kind of aggressive language from the North Korean government on previous occasions, but it seems like they're ratcheting it up to a new level this time. What do you make of it, and how concerned are you?
Well, Greg, I've had an opportunity to visit Korea many times during my career, even Panmunjom, where the peace talks and negotiations had gone on. But, you know, for over 50 years, the North Koreans have developed a tremendous psychological weapon that they use against the South Koreans, the Japanese, and us. And it's very powerful. And what we've seen over the years is that they've been able to, you know, draw a line, and they dare you to cross it, and then you cross it, and then they dare you again, and they keep drawing you in as threats are made by any of the other countries, you know, to back off, create increased sanctions against them. They keep daring us, and they play us like a fiddle, Greg, and that's what they're doing now. And the missiles that they've developed, the launch systems, being able to then attach a nuclear warhead to them, to work with Iran and Syria on the same kind of proliferation, that's where they're all tracking. And they look at us as a paper tiger. We're going to talk, and we're going to strong arguments against what they're doing, but we're going to end up doing nothing, in my opinion.
Do you believe right now, General, that they are serious about potentially attacking South Korea or maybe Japan if, in fact, there is increased crackdown, say, on some of the shipments coming into their country and so forth?
Well again, if you track historically their pattern, even with the father way back in the 50s and 60s, they always saber-rattled. They always did that. But yet they've never really have attacked across to the south, because they know that our overhead reconnaissance, our Pacific fleet, some 30,000 almost of forces that we have there, and a very powerful, strong, well-trained South Korean armed force, if they make that move, then they know they will hit the trip wire, and the contingency plans then to strike them have already been drawn up. I don't think we'll provoke it, but if they do provoke it, then there'll be a retaliation that will be very severe.
General, what do they really want? During these six-party talks, it seemed like they were ready to dismantle their nuclear program in exchange for other sources of fuel and perhaps other foreign aid, because they don't have a lot of money, and what they do have, they pour into their military program. And it seems as though that on some level they perhaps just want respect. At the end of the day, what is this all about for them?
I don't think it's a matter of respect. They have their goals to dominate. They would like to take over South Korea. I'm sure they're very happy about the failing financial system around the world. Certainly it's got an impact on them, because they're a very poor nation from the standpoint of per capita income and the quality of life in North Korea. China is the leverage factor yet there, but yet they don't assert themselves in holding back the North Koreans from proliferation. So it's a problem. The solution, probably, if they do provoke anything, would be a military option. But that then creates a situation there that's going to be bad for both sides. So I think they'll continue to play us like a fiddle. We'll offer them things. But, you know, they've never really backed down on the nuclear proliferation, even though they say they stalled and closed. You can be well assured behind the scenes that they continue to develop their WMD program.
General, as you mentioned,
mass destruction.
You mentioned that you've been able to observe this country up close over many years, and you continue to observe them. In terms of this story that we've seen in the last few days about the two female television reporters arrested and eventually sentenced to, I believe, 12 years of hard labor. Many people believe it won't end up being that long. They're just trying to make a political point across the Pacific Ocean. Some have said this is a bargaining chip. What do you make of their decision to do what they've done with these reporters?
Well, I think it is a bargaining chip for two young female reporters. Obviously, it's their way to make a statement to the West. They'll look to bargain something away that, again, that moving that line in the sand all the time until they draw you in, until you do concede and you do make some kind of economic offers to them, whether it be oil or food or whatever. They're very good at that. And unfortunately, we in the West aren't very good at that psychological impact anymore. We react rather than act. And so we issue strong statements, and, of course, that's the way Iran looks at us as well. And they look at the European countries as even weaker.
General, it's been said in these six-party talks that everyone involved, with the possible exception of North Korea, doesn't want North Korea to have nuclear arms. And as you mentioned, China perhaps is the linchpin here. Do you believe that China really is committed to a nuke-free North Korea?
No, I don't think they are. I think it's the Chinese way to have a proxy force over there that can put pressure on any development in Japan. I think, again, a communist nation, as China is, they're very big into psychological operations, psychological moves against any adversary. And so I think with that, they'll continue to allow North Korea to sable rattle as much as they can. It keeps things off balance over there, and it keeps it in favor of the Chinese. So what would be a good move, in my opinion, would be to have Japan go ahead and develop a nuclear capability to offset it. But I think, like Iran, Greg, North Korea already has nuclear weapons to some degree, and now they're matching up delivery systems with the missile launches to test that. I think they're both up to the same thing.
General, some have pointed out that this may all be a big rhetorical smokescreen, so other countries, including the United States, don't sense weakness as a likely succession is taking place here from Kim Jong-il, who is apparently quite ill, to his third son, who is he's named as his successor now. Can it really be that simple, or is it also a lot of what we've talked about before?
Oh, I think they will groom the next generation. I'm sure they've already decided that it's going to be his son. And you'll probably see no change. There's such a bureaucratic, communist-driven type of government that completely represses the people, as any fascist, socialist government does. And so they know the strength of that, and they know the strength of their armed forces to control the populations. So I think they're very much right on their target, right on their mission, and the same thing goes for Iran.
What's your analysis, General, good or bad, of how the Obama administration has reacted to this ratcheting up of the language in the Far East, and what would you encourage the policy to be going forward?
Well, I think number one is just a carry forward of talk, rhetoric that we produce out of our State Department. We really don't ever take much actions other than trying to follow the economic sanctions route, appeasement. And that doesn't work with these kind of regimes. It just doesn't work, and we should know better. It's been going on for decades.
In terms of what we've seen from a response from the president and Hillary Clinton, have they handled this well? Have they been too soft? How would you characterize it?
Too soft, obviously. The Bush administration took them off the terrorist list. I'd put them back on it because they are supporting international terror. And that was a very bad move, as John Bolton even said, former head of the U.S. representative of the United Nations and Assistant Secretary of State, that, in fact, the North Koreans will, again, play us like a fiddle, and that they will, in fact, take actions in their own interest. And that's another step we could take, put them back on the terrorist list. But we also could basically also consider upping the ante a little bit with an actual threat to them, because they're threatening to use offensive operations against us.
Do you sense that is likely on the table in any serious way? It seems as though Bob Gates, the defense secretary, has at least brought that up, but it doesn't seem like it's necessarily a major option for the Obama administration, given that the North also has nuclear weapons.
Well, listen, this government is full of appeasers, as the British are. So we'll continue to appease and take, the weakest approach. North Korea to continue to follow their pattern of creating and developing an arsenal of nuclear weapons, both to feed into the Middle East as well as to use themselves. And when they feel we're at the weakest part of our economy, of financial downturns, that they, in fact, may take action to take South Korea.
General, unfortunately, our time is up. Thank you, sir, as always, for your time.
Okay, thank you, Greg.
Retired U.S. Army General Paul Vallely served as Deputy Commanding General in the Pacific. Most recent book is Blood for Our Future. This is Dateline Washington.